Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Respectfully Disagree. Almost a decade ago, it would have seemed unimaginable that sliding into people's DMs, retweeting, or sharing stuff on Facebook becomes the main way through which we communicate. But today, unfortunately or fortunately, that's the way things are. And that's why we're coming together on this episode to talk about one of our personal favorite topics or pet peeves, depending on how you look at it, which is social media and whether it's ruining how we communicate. So to start off with, let's talk about where we stand. This is Shrishti, your host, and I am arguing in favor of social media ruining how we communicate.
Hi, this is Rohita. And I think I'm actually on the side of how social media not ruining communication as much as we think it does. I think there's a lot of alarmist headlines and research around this, but there is also research to show the opposite. So, yeah.
Sorry, Rohita. I'm back on the other side of the aisle from you. I'm with Shrishti on this one. I think that social media and the whole bunch of the other sort of tech-enabled ways that we communicate are undoubtedly lowering the quality of our connection with each other.
Okay, so I'm glad to be on the same side again. It was hard last time being all alone. So Rohita, I understand your plight. But I think to start off with, I want to put forth the most important point, which is that I think it's the first time that a medium of communication has become so widespread and we have such little knowledge of how it actually functions. And it's changing the way in which we think and the way in which we talk in ways that we don't even understand. And I think that's extremely, extremely dangerous. There's too much opacity around the medium and too little control on those of us who use it and how we communicate through it, right? And we all know that. And I think that can be quite disturbing and disconcerting. And more than anything, I feel like that is ruining how we're communicating, because we should have as much control as possible of our mediums. But I think we're not communicating what we want to communicate, but we're communicating based on what algorithms think we should communicate in, right? So it becomes posts at some point, it becomes reels at another point, it becomes retweets at one point, it becomes DMs, like depending on what's being prioritized by the algos of the various companies. So I feel like that's my biggest argument in favor of like, it's just ruining how we talk to each other.
But Shrishti, you're speaking about how we use social media and sort of like broadcast our lives to an audience, which is different from interpersonal communication, right? Like when you just speak to one individual alone through an online medium, it isn't necessarily the case that it's always dystopic and we've completely lost control of our own thoughts and the algorithms are dictating everything that we say to one another. I agree that that's obviously the case when it comes to how social media is used generally, like our usage of social media and our social media activity. But when it comes to communicating with a single person online and having a sort of dialogue with or a relationship through a virtual medium, it isn't as just.
But see, there's this idea now that because communication is facilitated through all these various platforms, that we're able to communicate more with more ease with a greater number of people, right? And that somehow just the volume, the increase in volume of communication or the ease with which you communicate is automatically making communication better. And I would argue it's the exact opposite, right? So of course there are like wonderful things, right? That you can keep in touch via, you know, video calls with family that lives in a different country. Okay, that's wonderful. But the truth is overall, except for these sort of like bright spots, which I think are more exceptions, overall, I think that inherent tension between like volume and quality, which always exists, is definitely like skewed in the wrong direction here, because the volume is necessarily making the quality of the individual communications worse. If you just look at how difficult it is, for example, to keep up with friends and like work messages on WhatsApp. WhatsApp is like, from what I can tell, the bane of everybody's existence, right? It's facilitated things, but it's also meant that we're constantly like climbing out from under a giant mountain of like quasi meaningless messages. And none of these are like fulfilling substantive conversations, but we're constantly in the process of communicating and yet not feeling fulfilled by those communications.
I mean, good morning used to be a pleasant phrase at one point in time, and I think WhatsApp has totally ruined what that means. I want good morning back.
Okay, but I actually disagree with that because I don't know. So WhatsApp is, and social media in general does incentivize hyper communication, that's true. But it also allows for more boundary setting, which I think when people talk about how social media is ruining communication, there's this inherent discomfort with other people setting boundaries, which isn't that possible in like face-to-face conversations or whatever. And I don't know, it just allows you to disconnect if somebody is making you upset or uncomfortable or whatever. It's just okay, and there is maybe a case to be made for why that's not a healthy thing, but in general you don't have to always speak to everybody just because you can, and a lot of people are navigating that in their own ways, which isn't a bad thing.
Wait, does it allow you to keep more boundaries? I would argue the exact opposite. I mean, the best boundary of all was the home landline, where like nobody can reach you, like nobody, no, you don't have your telephone physically attached to your person. They call you if you're not home, they leave a message on your answering machine, right? End of story. Like those were the true boundaries. And frankly, like, I don't know if you all, maybe you all were too young for this, but there was something in the US, there was a moment when somebody invented this great thing called caller ID, right? Where before you never knew who was calling. So when the phone would ring, when the home phone would ring, you didn't know, was it like a business call for one of your parents? Was it one of your friends? Was it the plumber? Like you had no idea who was calling, right? And then when they invented caller ID and suddenly you could tell who was calling on the home phone, then you could easily avoid people. And so they, you know, would just go to voicemail and they would never know if you were home or not home or where you were. And if they didn't leave a message, you had no obligation to ever call them back. So I think now I feel constantly sort of tracked by the sort of read or unread messages, or by the fact that people know that I've seen that they tried to get in touch with me, and that means I have to respond within a certain amount of time. It's very, very oppressive.
No, I was just saying, I don't know if I agree with the fact that a phone call is more meaningful than a back and forth on WhatsApp, because sometimes, I don't know, there's a stereotype about how millennials and Gen Z don't like answering phone calls. And we just prefer texting and communicating via text and memes. And I think that, I mean, it shouldn't be something to scoff at or dismiss, because that has its own merit. It kind of keeps you in contact with somebody for far longer. I mean, it's kind of like a background thing, right? You don't, it's a form of being in touch with somebody far more than a phone call. I mean, it's continuous, it's ongoing all the time, it never ends, so to speak. So you just, that's a different form of meaningful connection than like a phone call. And a lot of people exchange, like, you know, if you think about somebody, if you look at a meme and it makes you, it reminds you of somebody, you send them that, and then that in itself is something thoughtful for the other person. It's just different. It's just changed now. It's not necessarily worse.
So I have a question for you, Rohita, then. If you feel this way, do you think that the ease of these like various types of online communication, is it making us better or worse at handling uncomfortable conversations with people in person? Because I feel that there are a lot of people who focus their time and attention with friends and family on their phones, who are then seemingly completely incapable of like having difficult, like emotionally uncomfortable conversations in person because they just have not practiced it.
I mean, is that because of technology and social media, or is that just a function of how uncomfortable conversations have always been difficult between loved ones and family members? And arguably, there is something to be said for how uncomfortable conversations are much easier to navigate via writing, like you know, like, there's a lot of times where people argue on text and like long blocks of text, and it just allows you to put your thoughts together and be more articulate and more, I don't know, it's less messy than like a face-to-face conversation sometimes, and that really helps people. I mean, especially if you're mad at somebody, it's much easier to confront them on text than it is to confront them in person. I don't know why one is valorized over another. Like, why is it seen to be a bad thing if you don't have the quote-unquote guts to come and say something to somebody's face and instead choose to write them a very strongly worded text about it?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because as humans, we do crave and need, like, it's our nature that we crave and need in-person sort of like interactions. We need human-to-human interactions. And there's all of this research recently that's been done in the States about why American teenagers are increasingly more and more and more miserable. Like, there's like the mental health issues are just like through the roof, suicide rates are up. Like, there's all of these metrics that, you know, like researchers use to track like how unhappy, let's say, a generation is. And they're seeing numbers that don't jive with any other previous generation. So in general, they're seeing that like American teenagers are just much more miserable than any teenagers in previous decades. And so a lot of people have been trying to figure out why, like, what is this, right? And of course, I think it would be overly simplistic to say it's because of social media, right? Because there's plenty of other stuff going on. But one of the sort of, you know, one of the hypotheses that's been floated out there is that because more and more and more of the, you know, social interactions, school interactions, every sort of interaction is happening on phones and on computers, that people are increasingly creating these entire worlds, these social worlds, but completely by themselves. So they're more and more and more isolated, just sitting in a room, feeling like, okay, I have friends because I'm like talking to them in some medium, but I'm not ever really out there, like engaging with the world and like trying things out and like, you know, trying to break up with someone in person and failing miserably and learning what I need to do better next time and seeing that person's face. Like, have I hurt someone's feelings? Like, you know, you see, like you were saying, Rohita, that nonverbal communication, that stuff is important. Like, you have to be able to pick up on those cues. Like, what am I, you know, how do I learn to communicate about things that are uncomfortable or important or emotional with another human being? It's vital to how we feel fulfilled and connected in the world.
But Carla, how much of that research is about, you know, how we communicate and interact with one another? And how much of it is about, you know, targeted ads, a lot of different industries coming, like this juggernaut of the beauty industry coming and making everybody feeling insecure and miserable about themselves, and like, I don't know, bullying, cyberbullying, and a lot of mental health issues as a result of impossible beauty standards that you see online, and conspiracy theories and all of these horrible things about social media, which go much beyond communication styles, right? Like, in communication in general, it's just a much bigger beast than just in, like, you know, in terms of the question of face-to-face versus virtual communication. So
I also feel like a lot of this like, which is what Rohita, you were talking about at the beginning, right? Like, the kind of criticism around social media, I do feel a lot of it is conservative and it doesn't focus on the right issue.
I mean, okay, Rohita, or one of you was like complaining about the conservative curmudgeons who, like, you know, complain about how in the olden days it was better. But let me tell you that it was better. I mean, there's a reason, right? So there's a reason that I'm saying this, because it was better. And like, it was messier and it was more uncomfortable. And there were times where you felt quite shit, or you felt like you screwed something up or whatever. But overall, it was better. And I don't know. I mean, again, I'm only speaking from personal experience and my personal situation, but I'll say that, like, I feel more connection with the people with whom my friendships with them developed and blossomed either in person or through some sort of experience, right? But not entirely through, you know, WhatsApp or DM.
But to kind of move to a different side in terms of, because I do think there's a back and forth which could go on, but to shift over to Rohita's side a little bit again, I do also wonder, like, and a throwback to last episode about long distance relationships, whether the biggest advantage of social media is that it allows you to, you know, communicate when you're in totally different places and spaces, and you can now communicate much, much more easily, definitely, than you did before. Is that enough of a benefit to kind of outdo a lot of the harms that we've been talking about, right? And I think it's not just in terms of like safety, in terms of like aging and how it gives the elderly a way to connect with younger generations, and just generally how we can connect across space and time. And I think form communities, especially where a lot of the times the people surrounding us might make us feel alien or unknown. For a lot of marginalized communities, not unknown, but alien or discriminated against, you find community online and you find, you know, like-minded people through social media. So just wondering if that is a huge benefit which could outdo a lot of the evils.
It seems like that's the benefit that those platforms tell us they're going to provide, and that if you look at things in the most idealistic way possible, that should be the benefit of them. I think what I'm arguing throughout this episode is that is the promise, right? That is what it should have been, but that in reality, that's not what it is, right? And so what we actually hear about so frequently is that these spaces, which are meant to sort of encourage these, you know, communities and people sort of to bond, you know, across borders and, you know, across time zones, that actually it's opening people up to sort of harassment, to, you know, to sort of forms of surveillance, to all sorts of things that are very uncomfortable, that might actually be making their marginalization worse, right? And so it's not entirely clear, like, that now with these new forms of bullying and harassment that are happening online, it's not clear if you were to try to weigh the two, right? What is the benefit more, or is this very, very extreme cost and this like very real sort of hurt that people are feeling based on what is happening in online spaces, or is that worse? Who knows? But the idea that they are only fostering community and like feelings of self-worth and, you know, connection is obviously a total fiction that we've moved past now for over a decade.
Yeah, I don't think, that's definitely true. It's not the case that they only foster community in a sense of belonging. But the point is that they offer a different way of communicating for people who prefer that, and for whom that's more comfortable. It there's a reason why a lot of people prefer texting and communicating over social media than like speaking on the phone, because sometimes at just the pace of the world we live in makes it really exhausting to hold a long conversation verbally or in person, and so this just makes it easier to stay in touch and keep relationships and foster connections in ways that are in tune with the kind of world we live in right now. So, I mean, it's a question of the broader question is that of the pace of our lives right now, and not necessarily social media alone, I would say.
I don't know. I feel like this is an argument that can go on forever, and it's kind of where we started from. At the core of it is just that we perceive social media very differently based on our experiences. Hopefully both of these perspectives resonated with our listeners. And if you have a third perspective, please feel free to share it with us. Slide into our DMs, use social media to communicate what you feel.
Please don't. Please don't. We won't have time to write back.
Post a letter like they did in the olden days.
This podcast is brought to you by TS Studios, the production company that brings the Swaddle's creative point of view to original podcasts and films.